As Republicans make more gains in the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi argues Democrats still hold the majority.
Pelosi says Democratic losses aren't on her. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says Democrats veered toward socialism. Conservative Democrats believe liberal Democrats nearly cost their party the House.
Fox's Chad Pergram. America's listening to Fox News.
New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
My name is Kennedy, and welcome to my podcast, which will, I humbly say, single-handedly save the world. You're welcome.
It's Kennedy Saves the World.
Whether it's politics, parenting, or just mixing a great cocktail, I will provide the olives and the booze. You bring your cup so it can runneth over with a wonderful dialogue.
Kennedy Saves the World. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
That's it.
Did you hear the news? Now you can, with instant updates from Fox News for Amazon Alexa, breaking stories and top headlines, daily coronavirus developments, the economy, and so much more. Brought to you by Fox News, America's number one cable news network. Plus, setup couldn't be easier because everything's ready to go in the app. Just say,
Alexa, play news from Fox
in Fox News.
It's the latest when you need it on demand from Fox News and Amazon Alexa.
Gyms, museums, movie theaters, and zoos will be closing their doors in Oregon next week as the state tries to curb the rapid spread of the coronavirus.
Oregon Governor Kate Brown says cases are now topping 1,000 a day in her state. She predicted dark days ahead for hospitals, announcing that as of November 18th, a new two-week freeze would take effect, limiting all restaurants to takeout only. Grocery, pharmacies, and retail is limited to 75% capacity. And she also clarified the limitations on get-togethers.
This means you should only socialize with one other household. For those of you who live alone, choose up to five people total to socialize with for the next 2 weeks, and that's it.
Churches and faith-based venues, she says, are limited to 25 people indoors. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
In New Mexico, a two-week stay-at-home order has been issued. The governor there saying it's a life-or-death situation. Half a dozen governors in the Northeast will hold an emergency summit this weekend on COVID-19 as infection rates continue to rise in the region. New York's governor says the group will talk about possible coordinated restrictions on things like interstate travel and quarantine rules. In the past 2 weeks, New York has reported more than 45,000 new infections. Big bucks are being spent in Georgia, where the balance of power in the U.S. Senate is at stake. Two Republican incumbents face runoff elections in January.
Leading up to the general election, $200 million approximately spent, and going into these runoffs, it could reach as high as $500 million. Georgia's Republican senators tie their challengers to radical elements of the Democratic Party, while Democrats accuse incumbents of gutting health care during a pandemic.
Fox's Jonathan Seri. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News.
From the News Radio 930, Eastern Day Wilson Water Services News Center. This is WFMD News.
The number of coronavirus cases took a big jump statewide and locally. The Maryland Health Department reports as of Friday, there were more than 161,000 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. That's an increase of over 1,800. There are more than 4,100 deaths as of Friday, 12 more than from Thursday. In Frederick County, the coronavirus cases have jumped to over 5,400. That's 68 more than the day before. Some new regulations to combat the coronavirus took effect in Frederick County at 5 o'clock Friday afternoon. Meeting on Thursday at the Board of Health, the County Council and the County Executive approved a resolution requiring all persons 5 and older to wear face masks indoors and outdoors where social distancing is not feasible. I'm Kevin McManus on Mid-Maryland's Radio News Center, 930 WFMD.
The 930 WFMD Skyscan forecast for Frederick and surrounding counties. As we head into the day, sunny with a high near 54 and northwest winds 3 to 8 miles per hour. Saturday night, increasing clouds with a low around 38 and calm wind becoming southeast 5 to 8 miles per hour after midnight. Sunday, we'll have a 60% chance of showers, mainly after 1 p.m., with a high near 62 and south winds 8 to 17 miles per hour. Winbrook Services Electrical Heating and Cooling, with a $59 flat service. I'm Dan Sutton.
The following program does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WFMD.
It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, blending business and politics. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome to Success Happens. This is Jen and it's great to be with you today. Another great day in the neighborhood. And I am so excited to talk about something that, frankly, I'm concerned about. I think a lot of people are concerned about when it comes to our health and safety as families, as individuals, as businesses. As a society, we have a global picture on healthcare because of this thing called COVID. And I wanted to address this today because I think that we're fixing to get into a position where we are going to have such a detrimental effect on ultimately our economy that may be unrecoverable. And I'm very, very concerned about it. And let's all say that, of course, if anybody has lost someone to COVID, we are sorry to hear that you have gone through that. Nobody wants to lose a loved one due to any form of illness, you know, and today, you know, we know that cancer and pneumonia and these things occur in everyday life and they may be exacerbated by COVID. So I wanted to deal with something from the perspective of healthcare and illness happen. Illness happens and healthcare is something we have to do to deal with it. But at what point do we have to accept that things are what they are and there may be a responsible way for us to deal with it without shutting down our economy again or shutting down the things that have us live our everyday lives and frankly not go through depression, which I'm already hearing from people. There are concerns about depression going into this next, quote, phase of COVID. So I brought together today two experts from the Heritage Foundation and a real shout out to Heritage Foundation for their partnership in bringing information, expertise in certain areas to our listeners. And so this morning, once again, we have with us Dr. Bob Moffitt with the Heritage Foundation, senior fellow expert in policy and healthcare. And Heritage also has availed Dr. Kevin Pham, who is a medical practitioner as well as policy expert on healthcare. Welcome both of you to Success Happens this morning.
Very happy to be here.
Great. Now, I want to start with, if I could, we all have met Bob, and Bob, you've been wonderful to come back and keep working through this COVID with us. I do want to start, before we go any further, I do want to talk about this idea of this PIC data, that in the spring, summer, there was a point at which CDC, I believe, combined all of pneumonia, influenza, and COVID into one data point. In other words, it used to be that you dealt with pneumonia deaths or pneumonia illnesses or hospitalizations, which unfortunately did hit our elderly more so than the rest of the population. Not that a young person can't die of pneumonia, but oftentimes that's the big fear, right? If somebody who's elderly gets sick with a respiratory condition, they could end up with pneumonia and it could take their life. So pneumonia, influenza, COVID data point, when you combined all those, exponentially expanded the data. And I think that it created perhaps a tainted picture of reality. So in that state of this COVID circumstance that we're in, when the data was combined and it blew up, which it did, there were some other factors involved in those that data not being a realistic picture, some of the inaccurate positive tests that were not positive, all of that got encapsulated in this PIC data. So my concern is that it painted an unrealistic picture of perhaps the success by the president of dealing with COVID, but also it drove us to something called mail-in ballots, which we're now dealing with the aftermath of that, right, in this election. So I wanted to have Kevin, you speak to, if you would, COVID data from your perspective and what you see from where you sit in your role. And perhaps you could expand a little bit on how you're involved with it.
Sure. So the PIC data, by collapsing the pneumonia, influenza, and COVID data, so PIC, by collapsing that into a sort of a data point, data visualization, they did that because both influenza and COVID cause, towards the more severe end of the disease spectrum, they cause a pneumonia and then that's usually what's going to ultimately cause death. And as we were moving through the end of this past influenza season, the influenza surveillance started to just drop like a rock. All the measures that we took to prevent COVID also worked to prevent influenza. Influenza being less contagious than COVID, the measures had a very strong impact on influenza. And so those began to plummet while COVID and COVID-related deaths started to skyrocket. And so we see a huge increase. When they measure these things, they measure in weeks. And so right around the 15 to 20 week mark, which is sort of the early pandemics when it really started to take off in Washington and New York. So we see a large percentage of PIC-related deaths from there. So, you know, it may skew the numbers a little bit or a lot of bit, but what it really is taking out some of the noise when you're trying to deal with pneumonia-related deaths, because, again, both influenza and COVID cause a pneumonia, a respiratory illness that results in pneumonia that ultimately results in death.
So my question is, why not just pull out the flu data? Let's not confuse the issue, because, you know, the flu may or may not kill you. So pull that out and only deal with pneumonia and COVID.
Well, influenza surveillance is, they usually look at influenza-like illnesses. Since influenza is such a weird virus that has multiple strains every season, and they try to cover that with the vaccines and they never get perfect coverage. Since influenza is like that, then they usually look at influenza-like illnesses, and COVID is an influenza-like illness. It's quite a bit different in one regard, but in regards to it just being a severe respiratory illness, then it is pretty similar. So why don't they pull it out? I don't know. It would be nice if they can just take that out. It probably didn't have a very large impact because, again, all of our precautions that we took for COVID caused the influenza surveillance to really plummet. And this is not to say that the data is good. Obviously, I would like to have as granular data as possible, and then mixing it all together makes it a little bit harder to get an accurate picture. And the CDC has had many other problems with data going through this, and they really need to fix it.
Could you expand on that? What other issues has CDC had?
And this is our colleague, Doug Badger, has been focusing on this issue. You can find his work at Heritage. .org. The data reporting is still done on antiquated machinery, so we're not always getting very up-to-date information, which is really what we need in order to respond properly to this virus. And so because there's not very good speed and agility with which data is updated, you know, sometimes things are being handwritten and then faxed over or something like that. There's some pretty arcane methods that they're using. Because of that, then we get these cycles where data seems to decrease and then is dumped on a single day. That really messes up the picture, which is why we've all been using 3 to 7 day averages as far as cases or deaths go. Then the average kind of clears it up, but you know it's still data that it's really noisy when it gets to the CDC.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for clarifying that from your perspective. When you look at other aspects of comorbidities with COVID, so for example. There's been controversy, right? I heard a story by somebody who knew an EMT in a Maryland jurisdiction here where the person arrived with a gunshot to the face and they were DOA, but they coded them COVID. I know from other hospital personnel that I have directly spoken with that there are cases where they coded them, but it wasn't their real cause of death. So what do you say to that?
There seems to be a lot of this, and I don't think that there's enough to really change the overall picture of what's actually happening. In a very bad influenza season, then we're looking at between 60 to 80,000 deaths from influenza. So we've exceeded that by a very fair margin. So this is still a very serious virus, and even if they are overcounting these things, it's not going to be enough to make up that difference. And so we should be concerned that people are overcoding for COVID deaths because that is going to impact the picture. But the overall picture that this continues to be a serious virus, that much does not change.
Well, there is a data point of something like 6,000 people approximately, it's probably risen since then, have died specifically of COVID. Those 6,000 were COVID specific. The others were comorbidities.
There was a table that seemed to suggest that only, I think it was like 6% of people were dying from COVID, and everyone else had comorbidities, it showed some people who had who did indeed have pre-existing conditions, and we know now for certain that those people with heart conditions or with obesity or diabetes, those people are particularly vulnerable to this virus. But then that table also showed influenza, respiratory arrest, respiratory distress. Those are things that are caused by this virus too. So when someone dies from COVID-19, they usually don't die from just the virus itself. They usually die from the downstream effects of the virus. So it causes pneumonia. After that, it causes what we've been referring to as the cytokine storm, this massive inflammatory response that does a lot of damage to several different organ systems. And that's ultimately what's going to kill somebody with COVID-19.
When you look at the death rate, it was something like 0.0003% have died based on, I think it's based on population. Can you clarify that for us?
The overall mortality rate from COVID-19 is, the overall, I think it was below 1%. But for those who are who's 64 and younger, the rate of the mortality is very low. And then if you're getting from like the below 59 and under, the rate is, it's like 100th, it's below 100th of a percentage point. So for the vast majority of the population, COVID-19 does not present a mortal risk. When you get up to the older ages, particularly in the 85 and older group, then the mortality rises up to about 5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about percentage of a population who may die from this, that is a lot of people. And so
let me ask you this, though, Dr. Pham, just on that point, is that very different than if they just had flu or influenza in that same age range and could die?
It is higher. Well, this is one of the peculiar things about COVID versus influenza. Influenza is usually pretty dangerous to those who are very old and those who are very young. But with COVID-19, below 1 year of age, then it's pretty deadly. Not extremely deadly, but it is more deadly to those who are under one. But between 1 year old all the way up until about 50 or so, then it's almost a non-factor as far as mortal risk goes. But then as far as those who are in the older age groups, then yeah, it's somewhat similar to influenza, a little bit more deadly though.
I would just like to just add one point here on this, and I think it's an important conversation. We should not, under any circumstances, underestimate the potential mortality of this virus. The 1918 flu, the so-called Spanish flu, which was the most devastating flu we ever had, that flu killed about 675,000 Americans over that year and a half period, 1918-1919. What's interesting about this virus, as Dr. Pham points out, is that mortality is highly concentrated among people who are over 65, who have compromised immune systems or suffer from serious comorbidities like heart disease and so on. If you have heart disease and you get COVID-19, you're in very serious trouble, no question about it. You're going to get very sick. In the case of the 1918 flu, the major vulnerability was among infants and also young people between the ages of 18 and 35. So we have it's a very different virus than we had in 1918. But we should not underestimate the potential for real damage here. The thing that I think is significant, though, is that what we are wrestling with here in the United States right now, we're obviously in a new wave of cases that could strain our hospital capacity in many parts of the country and lead to more deaths. I think right now the death rate is well over 200,000, 250,000. But at the same time, the outbreak in Europe is even worse if we're looking at the number of cases. We're getting, as Dr. Pham pointed out, about 130,000 cases per day over a seven-day average. In Europe right now, it's about 250,000. And that's significant because the policies that we have adopted, which is basically the lockdowns, social distancing, clearly shows that did not prevent a second wave in Europe. And the only reason I bring this up is because people like to politicize this virus. But President Trump, for example, is not responsible for what is happening right now in Italy or Great Britain or Belgium and Spain, where the case rates are exploding.
Hold that thought. We got to go to a break. I want to leave people with that to ponder. Thank you very much. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, MJAC Designs, Dianovich & Associates, KW Photography and Design. We'll be right back.
Are you interested in building your reputation through an outstanding customer experience? Hi, this is Melissa Lentz, owner of MJAC Designs. We are experts in understanding, evaluating, and improving your customer's experience. Times have changed. Now more than ever, organizations need to know how they are perceived. Let MJAC design a way for you to understand your customer experience. We put people first as a certified minority woman-owned business. Contact us at mjachdesigns.com.
The Morning News Express is back on Monday with traffic and weather together, local and national news, sports and headlines. Rise and shine at 5 a.m. Monday on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jen, and I have with me today Dr. Bob Moffitt with the Heritage Foundation Senior Fellow Expert in healthcare policy, as well as Dr. Kevin Pham, who is an expert in and a medical practitioner and an expert in healthcare issues. And in particular, we're talking today about COVID. Bob, before the break, you went on to say that that this has been politicized, which I think we can all agree on that. Continue with what you were saying, please.
Well, sure. I mean, we've had. We have to be clear about, you know, what works and what doesn't. We know that certain things simply do not work as well as we think they are working. If you're saying, in effect, that we should continue the status quo, which is to go even more stricter lockdowns, for example, on the economy, we've seen that same policy in Italy. We've seen that policy in Britain. We've seen that policy in Belgium. We've seen that policy in Spain and Europe generally. Right now, that Europe is experiencing an explosive second wave, which is worse than ours in terms of the total number of cases per day. So my only point is we got to get our heads straight about this. Just simply saying that, you know, we should continue what we've been doing, you know, since March, and that's going to solve this problem, it strikes me as a very short-sighted approach. It's a faulty approach to this virus. As Dr. Pham pointed out, and I, again, the data on this is absolutely clear, the biggest threat of the pandemic is to people who are over the age of 65, who have comorbidities, very specifically heart disease, pulmonary conditions, obesity, and diabetes. You know, that those people are in very serious trouble if they contract this virus. And as Dr. Pham pointed out also, this virus is highly contagious. It's more contagious than the flu. So, you know, we have to recognize where the threat is. The threat is primarily to older people. And that is where, in my view, and I'm speaking for myself, and I very much be interested in how Dr. Pham feels about this, because he is the expert on the medical issues, not me. But from my standpoint, very clearly, the public health focus, the energy, the effort, and the focus should be primarily on protecting the most vulnerable populations.
Well, and on that note, I do want to pivot to Dr. Pham, but here's what I would say about that. Protecting the most vulnerable populations is also a matter of personal choice. So that if you are somebody who deals with those types of health issues, you do what you need to do to keep yourself safe in public, frankly, even before COVID. So what I'm concerned about is the ripping away of personal freedoms. And I'm going to just put this out there right now. We're going to have to go to a quick break for news and we'll come back. But here in Frederick County, just Thursday night, the healthcare board, which is comprised of the local county council, Dr. Brookmeyer, our health officer, and the county executive, and they voted to implement a strategy for fining individuals. And basically what they've done, in my view, is they've deputized the county staff to go out and report people, and the initial fine for a first offense is $250 if you don't comply with this new order. So at what point has, frankly, the health department overreached their boundaries into law enforcement, right? So I have a quick question to you about that, actually, Bob. Any thoughts?
Well, no, public health is law enforcement. It's been law it is part of the police powers of the states established by the Constitution. Under the 10th Amendment of the United States, the states exercise plenary police authority to protect life and health and safety of the population as the responsibility. The question is, the specific measures that are taken, are they taken in the context of what is, in fact, most appropriate, what is most efficient, what is most effective in combating the virus? And I think these kinds of responses, that you're going to have an overall lockdown on the economy, that the kids who are perfectly healthy can't go to school, you've done away with in-person learning, you've basically created enormous problems, especially for low-income parents who cannot afford to hire tutors or participate in tutorials with other parents. You know, all of these things are mounting costs. As far as the lockdowns, Italy has had stricter lockdowns than the United States, and they imposed them sooner. They kept them in place longer than just about any other country in Europe. They also, by the way, have a national mask mandate in Italy. It's enforced by the military police in Italy, and it's backed by pretty significant fines. Nonetheless, Italy, like the rest of Europe, is undergoing another massive increase in cases. So obviously what we're doing, not only here in the United States, but in Italy, is not necessarily working. There are answers to this. One is, again, to focus your public health efforts on protecting the most vulnerable people in our society, people over the age of 65 who have comorbidities, people who are likely to get very ill and suffer death or hospitalization or death as a result of this virus. The second thing that we have to do is we have to adopt a more aggressive strategy on testing. Something that Dr. Pham and I have been talking about is the promotion of a rapid antigen test to detect the virus. The technology exists. Some terrific work has been done in this area, primarily by Abbott Labs. Very frankly, we should think about a national rapid testing program that will be able to determine who has the virus and who doesn't, and who is contagious and who is not, and start using that for things like airports, schools, any other large gathering to prevent the transmission of the virus from one person to another. You have a right to freedom. You have a right to personal freedom. What you do not have a right to do is to endanger the life of somebody else. If you have any kind of indication that you may have this virus. We have to find out, though, because so many people are asymptomatic. In other words, they don't feel sick, they don't look sick. We have to find out a way to identify people who are infectious.
Okay, and Bob, so, on that note, hold that thought. We're going to go to a quick break. Thank you so much. You're listening to Success Happens on Free Talk 930 WFMD. We'll be right back.
This is 930 WFMD and WFMD.com. Now, WFMD News.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan is investing an additional $70 million in various state incentives to combat the surge in coronavirus cases.
We're adding another $20 million to continue building up our strategic stockpile of PPE. Federal officials have encouraged states to have 60-day supplies, but we are meeting and in many cases already exceeding our goal of stockpiling 90-day supplies of the most critical resources.
With a vaccine against the coronavirus showing some promise, the governor said the state already has a plan in place to order, distribute, and administer the vaccine once it's available.
We are providing the initial funding of that plan with an initial investment of $10 million. For the acquisition of syringes and other necessary vaccination supplies.
Other programs receiving the money include food banks, rental assistance, and foster care providers. The governor made these announcements during a news conference on Thursday. To read more, go to our website at WFMD.com. The Maryland Court of Appeals says all criminal and civil trials, except those in which a jury has already been seated, will be suspended until at least January as the state is dealing with the surge in coronavirus cases. Maryland Court of Appeals Chief Judge Mary Ellen Barbara issued the order on Thursday. Some court functions will continue to operate on a limited basis. Maryland's courts shut down on March 16th and operated in a very little fashion until October 5th, when Barbara allowed jury trials to resume. For more local stories, go to WFMD.com. I'm Diana Gibson. I'm at Maryland's News Radio Center, 930 WFMD.
The 930 WFMD Skyscan forecast for Frederick and surrounding counties. As we head into the day, sunny with a high near 54 and northwest winds 3 to 8 miles per hour. Saturday night, increasing clouds with a low around 38 and calm wind becoming southeast 5 to 8 miles per hour after midnight. Sunday, we'll have a 60% chance of showers, mainly after 1 p.m., with a high near 62 and south winds 8 to 17 miles per hour. Winbrook Services Electrical Heating and Cooling, with a $59 flat service. I'm Dan Sutton.
Fox News, I'm Karen McHugh. While Joe Biden may be the projected winner of the presidential race, supporters of President Trump are not giving up hope.
First of all, the attention that has been called to some of these balloting processes, the harvesting of the ballots, the mailing out, the wholesale mailing out of ballots, treating it like it's some publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes entry form.
GOP Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee on Fox. Arrests are made in the killing of an Arkansas cop.
Police capturing the two suspects in Mississippi about 100 miles away from where the shooting happened. State police identifying the Helena West Helena police officer as 41-year-old Travis C. Wallace. Police say he was shot during a gun battle outside of a motel late Thursday.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. America is listening to Fox News.
This Success Happens business service announcement is courtesy of Melissa Lentz, owner of MJAC Designs, an expert in customer service performance and analysis.
As you know, understanding your customers' expectations is important to enhancing their consumer experience, and they must know that they are number one. Their needs and wants must be fulfilled to reflect positively on your business. Do we all have a tough day? Yes, we do. Do we occasionally fall short as a business? Sometimes. We all know life happens, and our staff is mostly doing the best that they can. When you know your customers and based on their feedback, you focus on providing quality service, those small bumps in the road won't negatively impact your business reputation. Our 20 plus years of experience have taught us that two things are true. One, customer feedback allows you to alter your business delivery and ensure satisfied customers. Two, when you incorporate customer feedback, you can more effectively build your brand through traditional marketing vehicles. But don't be fooled into believing that marketing alone will bring back dissatisfied customers, because they don't know what the next experience will be or if it will be any different. MJAC will give you the tools to identify, reevaluate, and enhance your customers' experience. Putting people first and building solid relationships with your customers is the most effective way to succeed in today's competitive marketplace.
This business tip is courtesy of MJAC Designs, a certified minority, disadvantaged, and woman-owned business. MJAC, putting people first.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jen Charlton, and I have with me today two experts in the area of healthcare. We are talking about COVID and all things health relating to our personal freedoms and what's appropriate and what may be overreaching. I know that there is a lot of controversy right now about forcing mask wearing, particularly some people who are, you know, like myself, I have asthma. Some people have it all the time, and it's an issue for them to wear a mask. They feel, you know, like they're having difficult breathing with them. So, Dr. Pham, if you could speak to, kind of picking up where Bob left off, about the issues around the, I guess, the appropriateness of imposing these restrictions on individuals in society, because I know that people are pretty lit up about feeling like their personal freedoms are impacted because, to your point, 65 plus is the main concern. why can't the rest of us live our lives freely?
Right, and that's a question that we've been trying to answer since pretty much the beginning of all of this, is what is the appropriate level of public health intervention? And what a lot of public health officials seem to have forgotten as of late is that the first word in public health is public. There is no good public health policy that does not work in cooperation with the public. And if you're just trying to impose things on people, at some point you're going to burn out their trust, for instance. And we've certainly seen that. And if you don't have the public's trust, then you're not going to have any cooperation with the public, and you're just going to get mass breaking of compliance, because a lot of it will just be seen as unserious and as unnecessary. These mass mandates are a great example. People are saying that you know, if you're outside of your house, then put on a mask. Well, if I'm walking to my car, then I really don't need a mask on, even if there's someone who walks across from me, because even if I were infected, that person would have to essentially walk right up to me and inhale my entire breath to get enough of a viral load to become sick. And so
that would just be weird. So, I mean, people aren't going to do that.
Yeah, that would be, it would be awkward, and I wouldn't appreciate that very much. but that is essentially the kind of interaction you would need to have if you want to get infected. Now, that is just an incidental passage, right, between one person and the next person. You know, if you're in a place where you cannot avoid close contact with other people, then you do run a much greater risk of contracting this virus, even if you're outdoors, even if there's some space between you and the next person. If there's sufficient space, and the chance is essentially zero, but may help there. But unless you're wearing an N95, then the protection is not going to be perfect. So masks are they're certainly not a panacea. They don't work perfectly. What they were originally supposed to be was a very lightweight solution that may have tremendous benefit to society. And we see mixed evidence. There's a lot of evidence that I've seen that masks do reduce the infection load on a community. But there's no controlled randomized trial that we expect to see that shows a definitive effect. So there's just not enough evidence out there to support a mandate. And even if there were enough scientific data to support a mandate, that becomes less a question of science, less a question of public health, and more a question of proper governance. And that's just not good governance.
Well, and I would say that here in Maryland, we have just heard several times from the governor about proper, we'll call it practices. I think, some of this for me is just proper practice. To your point, it would be weird, right? Somebody getting up in your face and start, you know, they're in that personal bubble. Now, they're saying it's 6 feet away, but even still, I think we've all kind of become accustomed to being 6 feet away from one another. It's almost like it's inherent or innate now, right? So, mm-hmm. So now that we're reconditioned to that wider space, is it really necessary to have that mask if we are 6 feet apart? Now, I will say in our gym, we have been reduced to 10. This is going to drive my costs of delivery of services, okay, because I can't have 15 anymore. I got to have 10 now to meet the needs of my deliverables to my customers. I'm going to have to add classes. That drives my costs, right? You look at 25% now in Anne Arundel County as deemed by County Executive Pittman. County Executive Pittman said no more than 25% now inside and, oh, by the way, outside in that tent you put in the parking lot, which to me is crazy. So at what point are they out of their lane in terms of imposing these restrictions on human beings?
They get out of their lane pretty quickly, because these are sort of ideas that they're having. They assume it works, but you know, if you really want to talk about whether this is useful or not, you really have to think about the viral particles, the microscopic, nanoscopic particles that come out of our mouths. If you're in a room that has zero ventilation and there's another person, it doesn't matter how far away from you, eventually the room will fill up with enough virus to infect another person. So, you know, what really needs to be the case is whether you have enough ventilation. The capacity is not extremely important, unless you're worried about getting sick immediately. But, you know, if with enough time, you will eventually transmit a disease. But the metrics that they're using, the restrictions and limitations, those are, they're just sort of picking those out of thin air. And I trust you to care more for your customers than I trust the government to care for your customers. You know, I keep making this point about church. Gavin Newsom doesn't care very much about me. He doesn't even know I exist. Father Nicholas cares very much about me and cares about my health and well-being. And, you know, our pastors will take care of the way we run our churches with respect to trying to keep their congregants safe. And I assume that it's going to be the same with you and customers.
100%. 100%. You know, we want to make sure that our people are safe, my team members are safe, and so forth. I'm willing to comply to those requests. But when you start overreaching and overstepping your bounds and imposing things back to this notion that, you know, most people between 1 and 50 are pretty much not going to die from this thing. When you get to 65 plus, it's serious for them. But so is the flu. Anything that deals with that respiratory is going to be serious for somebody 65 plus. I worry about my dad getting the flu. He's 90. So I just think that we've lost perspective. And when you look at the businesses and the economies today, and I'm just going to go, Bob, to you for a minute and talk about healthcare costs. Because there's a cost on the economy for shutting us down. We know that. There's this idea that shutting down the economy, we can't keep spending our way out of it. All the PPP in the world is not going to resurrect this thing at some point. Bob, you have thoughts about that?
Oh, well, look, I think we have to be realistic about what we're doing. We have to be realistic about these lockdowns. Now, there's no question about it. A lockdown can be of value, especially if your concern is to preserve hospital capacity. What you do not want is you don't want your hospitals to be overrun. Now, so far that has not happened, but there is a danger with a second wave that we might see the hospitalization pressures build. But a widespread lockdown of an indefinite duration is not the answer to anything. I mean, we've had, you know, a colleague of ours, Zeke Emanuel, and I know him personally. He's a brilliant man. He was an advisor to Barack Obama, and he was also he's also an advisor to Vice President Biden. You know, was talking about lockdowns. Months and months of lockdowns. We can't afford that. We've got to be, you know, we can't be using this, you know, this blunt instrument to get this. Virus under control. Government edicts, I mean, if you're going to start saying that you're going to just, you're going to impose these edicts, you've got to recognize that at a certain point, you're still dealing with, people who live in a free society. It's going to have a marginal effect on behavior. The danger is that if you overstep your boundaries, what you do, as Dr. Fan pointed out earlier, if you go too far, you create a backlash. You lose public trust, and if you lose public trust, that endangers public health.
Well, I would assert we're already there, Bob.
Public health authority.
I think people have already lost their trust. I think we're already there.
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, obviously, there's a look. We can second guess from now until the cows come home. Really, there's no question about it. We made a lot of mistakes since March, no question about it. We did so at the federal level, and we've also done so at the state level. And in some cases at the state level, like in New York, where they were sending infected people into nursing homes, the public failure, the failure of public health authorities was just absolutely dramatic. It's like being realistic about the masks. We know, as Dr. Pham pointed out, they have a value in reducing the risk that someone who is not aware that they are infected will infect another person. You know, there's no question about it. They have a protective capacity in that sense. But the point is, they're not absolute. We shouldn't ascribe magical powers, something like national mask mandates or something like that. The head of the CDC, Dr. Redfield, pay attention to the scientists, pay attention to public health authorities. Dr. Redfield said that mask wearing would bring the pandemic under control in 4, 6, or 8 weeks. Well, he was wrong. We have a very high degree of compliance in the United States with mask wearing. It's even higher in Europe. But the pandemic is not under control. All right. What I am saying is that we have to be very, very careful. The difference, I mean, what we have to inform people as much as possible. Scaring people is not the pathway to success here.
Well, let me stop you, Bob, on that, because we got to go to a quick break. But I believe that fear mongering is driving, you know, you mentioned Italy, and we talk about socialized medicine and a socialist state, which is Italy. And oh, by the way, they don't have it figured out either. But this notion,
Britain is a disaster.
It's a disaster, and they're trying to push us in that direction. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's got the worst performance in Europe.
But I also have another caller coming in, Dr. Simone Gold, who's a medical doctor. I would like to, 30 seconds, your thoughts about the healthcare cost of all this as we go forward.
The two costs that I see are that, again, I hope we don't resort to the kind of lockdowns we had with hospitals before, where we basically shut down normal medical procedures. I'm talking about the testing that is necessary for heart disease, cancer, and various others. We did that. We paid a terrible price for it. There are healthcare costs to that type of approach. The result of that, we've seen a lot of cost in increased depression, domestic violence, increased alcoholism, and suicide. All of these are healthcare costs. You've also had major costs to hospital systems throughout the United States. We're talking about a loss of enormous amounts of revenue because we overshot the goal. What we really should be doing is doing something that my colleagues at Heritage have recommended for a long time, which is to designate at the beginning of a pandemic, certain medical facilities that will be designated as the centers for care for people who are suffering from this particular virus, but allow the other hospitals, medical facilities, and physician specialty facilities to continue their normal operations as much as possible, because there's a tremendous cost in doing what we did in the past. Let me put it this way. We have to be a lot smarter in terms of our public health policy than we have been in the past, and that includes but the state governments, also the federal government. We've got to educate our system, our citizens. We have to make sure that they're educated and give them the freedom to make decisions that are best for them in their circumstances.
Okay. Now, on that note, we are so grateful for a great partnership with Heritage. For our listeners, please donate and support Heritage at heritage.org. Please go on and check out their website and support the organization as however you can. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today on Success Happens. It means so much to have your partnership in informing the public about these important issues around healthcare. And we will look forward to having you back again on Success Happens. So have an awesome day, and we will be in touch.
Okay. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless. All right, everyone, you're listening to Success Happens. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Simone Gold on Free Talk 930 WFMD. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Sweeties on the Creek, We're Scooping Now, Dianovich & Associates, KW Photography and Design, and MJack Designs. We'll be right back.
Are you interested in building your reputation through an outstanding customer experience? Hi, this is Melissa Lentz, owner of MJack Designs. We are experts in understanding, evaluating, and improving your customer's experience. Times have changed. Now more than ever, organizations need to know how they are perceived. Let MJack design a way for you to understand your customer experience. We put people first as a certified minority woman-owned business. Contact us at mjachdesigns.com.
It's all about your car. Call in with questions to Dave Serio beginning in less than 30 minutes right here on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jen Charlton, and I have with me today Dr. Simone Gold, who is a medical practitioner and part of Frontline Doctors, and has been instrumental in bringing a voice to the public on behalf of her colleagues in medicine and healthcare delivery. And so, good morning, Dr. Gold. So good to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just wanted to get your perspective. We've been talking to Dr. Bob Moffitt and Dr. Kevin Pham from Heritage Foundation from their perspectives on healthcare policy, costs, et cetera, perhaps even some issues around that I see around COVID data and this PIC data. But I'd like to understand from your perspective, we've got about 10 minutes this morning to have you share with us your perspective based on not only what you saw early on and you reported on, but what you've seen since. So could you bring people up to speed with your perspective?
Well, there's so many aspects. I know that a particular issue going on right now for you is masks. And, of course, the candidate, Joe Biden, is very, very keen on mask mandates. We could talk about that, or we could talk about lockdowns, neither of which are very helpful for stopping SARS-CoV-2 pandemic.
Let me ask you your perspective, first of all, on the spread and where we are today in terms of the expansion of the numbers. Are you seeing, right, as a practitioner, a larger number of people coming through your practice who are infected with COVID?
So it's very important to remember why this has become a public policy issue in the first place, and that was not to overwhelm our healthcare system. That is really the only public policy question that we need to address. So I don't care if there's more positive test results. I don't care from a policy perspective if there are people who are trivially ill or asymptomatic or people who will recover at home. Right? I only care, and as a policy perspective, if we're going to outrun our hospitals or our ICU doctors or ICU nurses, right? That was what the whole point of lockdowns, et cetera, is to not overwhelm our healthcare system. From that perspective, absolutely not. We have tremendous capacity to absorb anybody who needs it, and just rising case numbers when we're a wealthy country that's testing lots and lots of people is not the relevant variable.
Okay, now when you look at the COVID data and this notion of combining pneumonia, influenza, and COVID into one data point called PIC, which they did, in May, June, for two reasons. One, it grew the data exponentially and made the picture look much more grim than it was. And two, that impacted the politics of it and the decision to do mail-in ballots and to lock us down and all those other things that have been so detrimental. Your thoughts on that, please.
You know, it was actually, in retrospect, it was actually genius. I remember seeing that, and I couldn't understand that. Again, SARS-CoV-2 is a coronavirus. Most people will be asymptomatic or mildly ill or completely recover. There are people who do succumb, but they have multiple medical problems almost always. So that's obesity, diabetes, or severe heart, lung, or kidney problems. Excluding that, this is not a situation that we need to be adapting our whole society to. And to conflate influenza and SARS-CoV-2 and pneumonia was a stroke of public relations genius for one side.
Yeah,
it's not accurate.
It is very, very sad, the impact. I mean, we're talking now to parents. I own a gym. We're talking to parents about their concern of their children not having access to athletic fitness.
Can we talk about that? May I
yeah,
just jump in on
please,
that for a moment?
Please.
So SARS-CoV-2 is not a problem for children. Let's just come right out and say it. So the number of children who died from SARS-CoV-2 in the entire nation is around 80 or 90. That has to be compared to the number of drowning deaths in the same time, which is about 400, and the number of car accident deaths in that same time, which is about 900. In other words, everything must be compared to other risks that exist in life. You're less likely to be under 15 and die from SARS-CoV-2 than you are from influenza. So if we weren't changing our policies last year in preparation for influenza, why are we changing our athletic or school policies this year for SARS-CoV-2? It's wholly irrational. I think parents really should think seriously about stepping away from the school system and just doing it on their own.
Okay, so and we're actually talking to people about doing that. But I want to clarify something because I think people may be confused. SARS-CoV-2, are you saying that is the same as what we call COVID-19?
Yes, I try to be more explicit. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus and COVID-19 is the disease. So SARS-CoV-2, you know, if you have a positive test for SARS-CoV-2, it may or may not be relevant. You know, the PCR testing is overly sensitive. So I really only care as an emergency physician. I really care if someone is sick and someone needs my help. Those people have COVID-19.
All your doctors got together. And I want to just say this. You guys were so courageous when you stood up in front and you said what you said, and that video got shut down. I mean, it virtually got deleted by social media platforms, Google, whatever. Everybody was going to shut you guys down. Why? How did that feel? Tell me about what that was like for you.
So I have to say, all of my peers and I, we took a Hippocratic oath to help other human beings. And we are seeing a tremendous disinformation campaign, a tremendous censorship campaign all over our nation and really over most first world nations. So when we saw that, we knew that we had to come forward. So what the first White Coat Summit was 7 hours of educational videos, which you can now find on our website, americasfrontlinedoctors.com. But it's there so that people can know the truth. They can go about their lives being empowered. So we have information about masks and information about lockdowns and kids and elderly people and early treatment. That's why we did it. We brought together physicians and social media, like YouTubers, so we could bring the truth out to the American people. I wrote the book just a little bit ago. It's called I Do Not Consent. The main reason I wrote the book, yes, people were interested in what my story was, but I really wrote it to teach people how to recognize propaganda in real time. Because one of the main questions I get is, well, how am I supposed to know? I'm not a doctor. And I said, if it was as simple as being a doctor, then why are the doctors also, many of them, propagandized? The solution is to learn a way of thinking so that you can recognize when you're being propagandized in real time. That's why I wrote this short little book, which will teach you how to recognize propaganda.
Where can they find your book?
Yes, please. I Do Not Consent on Amazon.com. And again, it's almost life-changing to read, and so you can learn and you can not be propagandized. And I do this to help people, and I also do it because I love freedom. And it's very hard to advocate for freedom if you're a little bit unsure of the fact. And you think, well, maybe the other side is right, and maybe masks work, and maybe there's no early treatment. The answer is you can get the education and the facts on America's Frontline Doctors, and you won't be propagandized, and you won't be living in fear, which is the main point. When you live in fear, you can be controlled.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. Empowering patients, being advocates for our own health, was a big movement even over the last decade. It was all about empower yourself when you're with your practitioner so that you can make good choices for your own health care. And then all of a sudden that got ripped away from us with COVID. And all of a sudden other people are going to tell us how we can better do our health than we know to do for ourselves.
One of the things I write about in my book about how to recognize propaganda touches on that point, which is you must not forsake your own common sense for a supposed elite. I'm as elite as they come, right? I've got 2 doctorate degrees. And I'm telling you that you should not forego your own common sense in favor of an elite. It doesn't mean you should ignore them, but it means you should not ignore your own common sense. It's very important. We're now living in a time when people are told that what they've long believed for 30 or 40 years on the planet, that a piece of tissue in front of your face won't prevent you from getting a cold, won't prevent you from getting influenza, right? But all of a sudden we're to believe it stops you from catching this other virus. It goes against all of your common sense, lifelong beliefs. And one of the points is not to forego your own beliefs in favor of an elite, because they're propagandizing you.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for being with us today. What an honor to have you with us. Thank you to you and your colleagues for the important work you're doing on the front line, standing up not only for healthcare delivery with all your patients and the people you serve in your communities, but for all of us so that we can know the truth about, because I really believe that the truth shall set us free as it relates to COVID, and we have to continue looking at the truth.
Really quickly, just because masks are a hot issue right now, just so people really need a visual to remember these things. If you're wearing a mask and you walk by somebody who's smoking a cigarette, can you smell their smoke? And the answer is, of course you can. And then it's ludicrous to think that a mask where the smoke can go through, but a virus...
News Radio 930. WFMD, Frederick.
A Connoisseur Media radio station.
10 o'clock.